Welcome back to another episode of This Is Africa, y'all. Welcome back to another episode. We're glad to have you here. Today's episode, we're going to be talking about some norms and values. And I guess to start, I want to give out, start off with a little soliloquy. Well, actually, my name is Adama.
Hi, everyone. My name is Lloyd.
Hey, what's up, guys? This is Tamba.
Welcome back. My name is Amiri.
How are we all feeling, guys? Good.
No, we're feeling good. We need energy because I like this topic, so let's do it. We need energy, guys. Mm-hmm. You guys are a little down.
Ain't nobody
pipe
down.
It up. Pipe it up.
Okay, please. You know, actually, I feel that. In advance, if my voice disappears at any point, I apologize. But I'm going to try to give that energy, okay? So I guess to start, for better or worse, I think we all agree the world around us has expanded and millions of cultures and people have traveled the world, resettling and finding themselves in tons of different places. And in doing so, have found ways to mix, grow, or in some cases, even lose some of their traditions and pieces of their culture that they bring with them and or journey with them. And personally, I'm a first generation American born, and my parents coming here have tried to maintain tons of learned values and imbue them on me from something as simple as not using your left hand to ever do things like give or take money or eat your food, to even intercultural marriage and how that works. A lot of these norms have started somewhere and only continue as long as the people it's passed down to want to keep them up. So today we want to look at some of these norms and values and determine whether or not some of them are actually even lost, or if it's a positive thing that we have to maintain them. And to start off, I guess I wanted to give a general, you know, we didn't know how to really start this episode off a little bit because we thought it was a little bit different of a conversation, but the question we came down to, which I'll give out loud and I'll probably try to answer first, is how important do we think it is to even maintain some of our own personal norms and values that have been passed to us? To be clear, and this is something that Lord brought up a little earlier, norms and values are different in every family, you know? So not everybody shares the same norms and values. Everything is different. So determining whether or not to want to continue these norms and these values and push them along to your kids and whoever that may be is all subjective. And I think to me, it's insanely important to want to keep up a lot of these norms and values, because I believe in the work my parents have done. I think they were able to raise, well, like they said, I don't want to give myself too much credit, okay? Because I've obviously made choices along the way and grown up and have made bad decisions based on my experiences. But the norms and values that they've dropped onto me have always brought me back to the right path, no matter what I was doing. And for me, I need to give those norms and values to my kids too, so they can somehow turn out, you know, or even have those things to lean back on and those foundations. Hey. So I think personally for me, it's insanely important to want to keep up all these norms and these values and push them onto my kids and going forward. But that's just obviously me and my norms and values. So how are you guys feeling about that?
Well, I don't know if you want to speak on that first, but like in your household, what are some like norms or values that you would say your parents have taught you that you think you could possibly push onto your kids?
Okay. I think, for one, chivalry. I think that's a big one. Regardless of who you're dealing with, I think my parents, like, they raised really chivalrous kids. And at a certain point, I thought it was too much. Like, I thought they raised me to be a person who was always giving to someone, trying to take care of and make them okay, and, like, think about them before I think about myself. So it was always a dynamic that I fought with. But because of it, any space that I enter, I always enter in a space that's like so open. It's just so open arms. Yeah. I'm here and ready to like embrace someone. And once I learned to like understand the value they were trying to really bestow upon me, that it wasn't go out and put everybody before you. It's be courteous. Like stop and think that this person could be going through anything. You know what I'm saying? Those things where I was like, oh, shoot. I think that's important. So now at 25 and I have a long way to go, like, it means even more now, you know? So I think that those are one of the norms and values that I think I'd hit on. There are obviously more cultural ones, but that was one that was like specific to like my mom's, like she would always attack me for it. So I think that's one example.
Yeah. I could probably start next, but I would say one thing from a very young age that my parents have instilled in me is having respect for others, regardless of Well, mainly a reason because of their age. Like, if it's an elder, then you definitely have to show respect regardless of the matter. Even if you feel like they are disrespecting you, like, then you go consult your parents with that, and then they will address the situation. But being respectful to others, no matter their background, ethnicity, culture, whether they're rich or poor, just showing the overall respect for them as a human being. So I would say that has transitioned into other areas of my life too. So I would say that's one of the main values.
Yeah, and I'm actually glad you brought that up, because that can just, that's a perfect segue. We can just start the conversation right then and there. I think one of the lost values that we're going to talk about today is respect. And I feel as though we might be the last generation that has this thing of respect still down pat, according to our parents and our families, of course. I feel like the more and more we're getting older, the people that are younger than us, that are of African descent and that are also living in diaspora, and even people living in Africa on the continent itself, are losing this aspect of respect, you know, and that can be because of many things. Because one thing you hear our parents talk about now a lot is like, oh, kids nowadays don't have respect anymore. Kids nowadays don't have this anymore. For example, an example I can give, whenever I see somebody older than me, for example, like an elder lady, like very old, I would say probably like 50s, 60s, get on a subway or get on, I don't take buses often, but gets on the subway or the train anywhere, and I'm sitting down, I'll give them my seat. And to me, that's just like that sign of respect that just automatically I'll do. Or whenever I see somebody struggling with a cart or the baby, when, you know, the baby stroller's coming up the stairs in like Grand Central, like any subway station, I help them bring it up. And that's just like, right away, just, I don't even think about it. It's second nature. Like, I'm like, hey, do you need help? And right away, they're almost thankful. But I see thousands of people just walking by them, hundreds of people right there walking by them, and they don't do anything. So I think respect may be a great way to start our conversation in terms of lost values in the African diaspora itself. And I'll let you guys go ahead first, and then we can get deeper into it.
Yeah, I think just really quickly, I just wanted to add a little story. Just to drop in there, because you said the train thing was a good example. Just to show you how ingrained I think some of these values and norms are in me. I was on the train once in the MTA, obviously. I was on the train, riding the train. And when I got on the train, I was pretty tired, long day, and I was aiming for a seat. And I got bumped on the way to the seat by an older woman. And she bumped me and kind of moved me out of the way and took the seat. And I remember internally being so frustrated that I wanted that seat, and it was almost like I had to give it to you, you know? And I remember telling myself at that moment, I'm like, you know what? For the rest of the day, I'm not being nice to anyone. For the rest of the day, I'm not going to be courteous. I'm not going to give anybody anything. Like, I'm going to, if I find a seat, it's my seat. Like, you know, like, and that's how I'm moving. Literally 5 stops later, seat opens up. I sit down. I sit down. And as I sit down, the doors open and an older woman walks in. She walks in and she's like looking for a place to sit. I see her once, and instantly I just hear my mom's voice. Boom, boom, boom. Get up.
You have to.
Offer her this seat.
Yeah, not facts.
And I was arguing with myself like, you do not have to do this, young man.
You're in America. Stay, you don't have to do seated. That. You're in America. You don't have to do it.
Yeah. I was like, do not get up. You just went through something where somebody was like, do not. And it was like almost like something just like pushed out of my, all the anger and thing that I felt, like it just went away. And my body was like, get up, bro. Like you. No, and I stood up and I looked at her and I'm like, please take this seat. And it was crazy just to show you like maybe like the impacts of it. But I proceeded to stand up. I had like 17 stops to go. Like this was not a like I stood up and I had 4 or 5. No, I stood up with stops. And I think she realized after like stop 10, she looked at me. She was like, oh, he gave me his seat. And as soon as she got up, because she left before I even got out, she walks up to me and I was looking at my phone. I just feel somebody tap me. I look up and I see her. She looks and she's like, thank you so much. Like she lips it and then gets off the train. And I was like, damn.
And it's those little things, you know, that makes you feel good. You right. know? Although you were upset about it, but it makes you feel good.
The values are important.
And just even concerning this, that's the ultimate sign of respect, you know, respecting your elders in our community, I would say. And just in the world in general, right? Respecting your elders is like a, is since a young age, like you said, it's taught you, it's like a big value thing. You know, for example, you come, you sit at the dinner table, you don't touch the food until your elders touch the food.
Never.
You know what I mean? You don't sit down until your elders sit down. You know, things of that nature is what our parents consider as respect. And even to us, that's it's respectful, you know, just to be respectful to your elders. But now we're seeing that more and more people are starting to challenge this. Like the younger generation, I would say, is starting to challenge some of these values. I wouldn't say all the way, but you can see the process happening slowly.
Yeah. Where I want to say it maybe falls more on norms than values. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But for sure.
That's what I'm saying. But even because we're talking from like a diaspora perspective, because back home, these things, like, you don't think about it. They're happening every day. But living in a diaspora, you have this opportunity to make your own choice.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the important thing. Now, you can see somebody that's maybe not from your culture, your same age, who maybe comports himself a certain way. And you're like, wait, why don't I adopt this? This works. This they seem a little happier than I am. Why don't I do what they do? Oh, some lady came in the on the train. None of my friends got up. I'm not getting up.
Exactly.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's more opportunities to do things like that, but that also dilutes our culture, what you've been taught at home. You know, so the more you're exposed to things in a diaspora, I would say, the less you the more your culture or your definition of respect gets diluted, that may lead to you, I guess, challenging your elders in a sense, or holding yourself to almost the same standards as your elders. Because to me, it's like the elders are above me and I'm below them, and no matter what, I have to respect them, even when I feel as though they're wrong. Now, as a young adult now, I can stand up for myself, but at 15 years old, I would have never thought that to, you know, even talk back to an elder or anything. But now, more and more, we're seeing younger kids, because I'm young as well, younger kids challenging their elders' opinions, challenging their elders' ideas. Now, my question to you guys is this productive? Is this a positive thing? Or from an African perspective, is this a negative thing? Because if you ask our parents, it's negative. Why are you talking back to me? Why are you challenging my ideas? You know, I would have never thought of that. But kids of this generation with the internet, social media, and all that stuff, they can just easily look stuff up and challenge anything they want. Oh, this study showed that 10 years ago, me speaking for myself is what's good for me. You know, they read a study and now they can challenge their parents. Now, they take it as disrespect, but maybe it could be a positive thing. So my question to you guys, how do you guys feel about that? And is it positive or is it negative?
I think a respected dialogue is productive. However, when normally we come from a background where we deal with a lot of traditional values, so you could probably say our elders or our parents may see that child challenging their ideas or norms as disrespect. But in the child's point of view, they see it as, listen, if you listen to what I'm saying, you might see a different perspective. I'm not trying to be disrespectful, but like, I feel like Gen X just want their parents to be
I
a
hate
more
when
open.
People do this Gen X.
What you mean is Gen X, bro?
Nah, go ahead though. Go ahead.
I'm Gen X, bro.
We're not generalizing you all.
I'm with you.
Gen X. I'm gonna say Gen X. Gen X, like, they see them challenging their parents as being a way of being open minded, where sometimes our parents may see it as a way of being disrespectful. You know, so, but I feel like a respectable dialogue is definitely productive. However, due to like passion and emotions being involved, you could see how it could be counterproductive.
Yeah, but also sometimes parents just don't understand that. You know, they take it, like I was saying, they take it as challenging you. Because to you, to your point, if it's productive, yeah, sure. You can sit down and have a productive conversation with your parents and they'll gladly respect it. But to you, it's almost as if you're challenging them. And let's just take a step out, even away from the parents, just elders outside in general.
Mm-hmm.
And living in the diaspora, I don't know you, I don't need to respect you. And that's kind of the mentality people have, you know, in the diaspora. That's why when they get on these trains. They're like, I don't know this person. Why should I be nice to them? They mean nothing to me. They've done nothing in my life. You know, and that's kind of what, from my experience, that's what I've been seeing, and that's what the feedback I've been getting from people I've interacted with personally. I don't know if, Lord, you want to tap in, because
I don't know, you don't want to go. Yeah. I got stuff.
I mean, I've experienced differently. I think that it's not getting diminished, because, for example, like, my little cousin, he respects his elders, you know, and my little cousin is, what, I think he is 12 now, you get me? So he still, when he sees me, he say, hey, like, hi, Lord, you know what I'm saying? He greets me, you know, he shows me that respect. And that was
his
me,
friends like
to,
that too?
Not, to everybody else. So even a boy that age also has it, because I think it's just more so with a nurture thing, and it's more so of the environment in which we live in. So, for example, when you talked about when the table is set and the food is here, nobody touches the food until the man of the house or the elder of the house.
I said the elder.
Sorry. the elder of the house touched your food first. That thing, I think, could be hard to implement in our society and our culture, because the type of lifestyle that is lived over here is very different from the lifestyle that is lived back at home.
Just to make it clear to you, we're talking about the diaspora here. So people of African descent that are living here.
Yeah.
So it's not just any random person. The people that are still raising these children are still African of origin.
I understand that. But the thing is just that, like, the pace of life is so different that, for example, let's say you have work at this hour of the day. You cannot be home to wait for the eldest person to start their food before you have to go, because at the end of the day, like, you have to be somewhere. Mm-hmm. So that type of thing is, I don't say cannot be implemented, but it's hard to do so when you're in a space where the pace of life or the lifestyle is different, where it's hard to upkeep that culture. And sometimes that culture just have to adjust. So, for example, you can implement that. If you do decide to celebrate it like Thanksgiving, I could see that as a way to you know, insert your culture background into it. But in certain cases, it's just hard. Like, for example, also, I know that from where I'm from, you know, in my neighborhood, you know, as a sign of respect, you have to say, you know, you have to greet your elders whenever they're passing by.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you don't, then you're going to get that phone call.
Mm-hmm. That's why I just hide in my room.
This is the phone call to your parents. Next thing you know, you go home. Oh, you don't say hi to people? I'm like, wait, what? I did say hi. Oh, it's not even I did say hi. Sometimes, personally for me, if I didn't, it's either by mistake or I just didn't see you. Maybe you saw me and I didn't see you. It could be that way. I'm not going to deliberately just walk away. You get me?
So
I just think that's in terms of, like, the loss in value. In some sense, can attribute to the change in environment to implement it.
You said something very important, I think, and I don't want people to miss it. You said it starts at home, basically. It starts at how your family environment is. So I guess to those children's defense, okay, a lot of the responsibility is on the parents in order to drill these values into their kids in terms of respect.
Yeah, normally.
So this might be a tough argument that I'm trying to make here, but I feel like parents always say this too. Can we say that if a kid is misbehaving or they have a lack of respect, can fall directly on their parents?
Of course.
No.
Well,
but to your argument, that's a possibility, because your cousin, I'm assuming your cousin was raised well.
Oh, absolutely.
Your little cousin's raised well. His parents are making sure they're on him.
Absolutely.
And that brings me to my next point. Before you start, I feel like sometimes, right, and this was in the case in my life, because you guys know, but my parents are strict, man. They've been strict my whole life, especially my father. So when we came to America, and I've lived in different countries as well. So from young, my father's thing was, I don't want my son to be a delinquent. And I was the first born. So
everything was tried out on
you. The way you're going to treat Tamba, it's going to reflect on how his siblings behave.
Mm-hmm.
So if Tamba is good, his siblings are going to fall in line, because now Tamba is going to be the one responsible for his siblings and making sure they're okay. Mm-hmm. Right. So I was the example, mm-hmm. you know, I guess the pioneer. So to him, when we came to the diaspora, he saw, or I'm not going to say he saw, but a lot of Africans living in the diaspora at the time.
You mean a lot of Africans in abroad?
Living abroad or just in the diaspora, Africans in the diaspora. Once they get to whichever country they go to, it could be Switzerland, it could be America, it could be France, it can be any of these countries, right? The parents kind of tend to fall back. Okay, I've got you somewhere where, you know, I've given you better opportunities. You go into better schools. You get educated. Like Laura was saying, I have to focus on my work, right, mm-hmm. to put food on your table, things like that. So I'm going to fall back, right, and let you experience your life yourself, because I know that you're not going to be endangered when you. I've taught you certain values already, so the rest of it is up to you. And maybe sometimes when they fall back, things that they do pick up in school and outside might affect or dilute the way they take this value that we're talking about today, respect, for granted. You know, because that's how they behave, and they go to their friends' house, they behave this way. Mm-hmm. Me, it was never like that. My parents, the same way they were treating me back home, the same. They were doubling down on that, because I said he didn't want to see his son become a delinquent or picking up French culture or American culture.
Basically, he don't want you in the streets.
Exactly. Yeah. He did not. That's something that he did not want at all. And so I feel like in my case, specifically, they would, no matter what, hey, Dad, can I, and this is obviously when I was younger, but I'm kind of reminiscing right now. Hey, Dad, can I go to my friend's house? No. Wait, I don't get, why not? I don't get it. Everybody's going to this guy's house. He's having a party today. No, you can't go. But now I kind of understand it. I don't want you to pick up some of the cultures they have and coming back home to try to challenge me. Mm-hmm. You know, this is the way it's done. This is how I want to raise you. And this is the impact I want you to have on others around you.
Entirely. Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I feel like sometimes when we do want to blame the parents, this is it. When they get to the diaspora, they kind of fall back because they feel as though their kids are in a better spot. And also they have a lot of things on their mind that they have to deal with. Maybe they can't pay as much attention to the kid. So that was just my little two cents on the parents' part.
I just want to add something to what Tiku was saying. So to answer your question with that, well, I feel like a lot of parents within that diaspora kind of fall back a little bit is because when you was back home, or say like you grew up in a certain household around other family members, they had help in terms of checking that child. You know, so it wasn't only the parent that was responsible in terms
community
of
effort.
Being accountable for that child's actions. It was the whole village. You had your grandmother, you had your grandfather, you have your uncles, your aunts.
The neighbors.
The neighbors.
You know, friends.
Local
that,
business people.
Yeah, you also had your friends that they didn't want to get in trouble with you because their parents mm-hmm. would check them too. So it was like, all around you was held accountable. It's like, when you come to like a westernized country now,
share the parents' same values.
Yeah. The parents may not have as much time to check you all the time, you know? So you kind of have to like check yourself to a certain level.
If you have those foundations, you know,
in a certain level of values and traditions.
Yeah, like, I think for me, like you guys gave me a lot. I'm not going to respond to everything because there's tons of points where I was like, and I'm like, you know how I get. So I'm trying to hit a few things that I thought was good over the past couple things. For one, I think like what Tika was asking us about when you said dilute, I think like first I don't think it's diluting. I think the definition changes. I think what respect is changes across the world, you know? And I think when we're talking about kids in the diaspora, I know me, the respect that I learned at home, when I went outside, it's not like I learned disrespect. I learned how other people respect their people. You know, like when I saw this girl talking to her mom, like it was her bestie that they just finished, like, you know, I'm like, and it was like almost in my head, like, I could never like use a curse word in the same, even if it's not directed to my mom, like say the word in the sentence and, you know, like thing like that's disrespectful. At the time I thought it wasn't. Now I can kind of speak more freely with my parents, but like at the time it was like, oh my God. But no, that was respectful on her part to her mom. That's the dynamic that they've come to. You know what I'm saying? Like, so for me, it's like, okay, now I learned these different levels, like these different types of respect. And then I come back and I have to decipher between what to use when. Because it's not like you can't use any of them. It's just when you're dealing with certain people, you have to learn when and when not to, you know, when and when not to do it. And I think like, just to be fair, like also sidebar, Gen X, we are not saying all of you. Like to Laura's point as well, like there are tons of kids who have tons of respect and like doing amazing things and whatever the space is. I think even to like Laura's point, when you brought up your little brother, I think the point is, or your little cousin, but I think the point is, we're talking about the amount of people that are following. You know what I'm saying? Like at one point you can look and be like, your whole community looks like this, but now you can see people who are not doing it. And now you see more people who are not doing it, you know? And like those things start to add up. And I think last thing, just to like kind of get out of here, I think, and Laura brought it up a little bit when you brought up the point of how is it that you're going to wait for the head of whatever when you're at work or when you're thing. And I think the key to that is like, well, the point to that whole thing is some norms and values don't translate. Like some values and norms, when you bring them to certain places, they just don't translate the same way as when they did over there. Yeah. You know? And yeah. I think like off the top of my head, and like, I'm like, maybe I'll come up with something in a little bit, but like, I just figure like norms and values don't always work the same in certain places. And you have to, like, for example, I had a family member who, so in Senegal, obviously, like when you're a man and stuff like that, they let you be more free, especially like back in the days, like with work works in general. It's like, go out there, go learn it yourself, go experience the world for yourself. Mm-hmm. Family comes here and they have a child and they try to implement that same style, that same go experience yourself, do these different things. And if you ask them now, they'd feel like it backfired in a way. Because a lot of those things that they required them to do and those type of stuff like that, the child turned out to be different than what they hoped would have happened. But it's because the community doesn't share the same norms and values. Yeah. You can send your kid out in Senegal and be like, okay, because you can trust his friend's going to be just as scared.
Yeah,
like you said, you know what I'm saying? Like,
that's a fact.
His uncle got him. Over here, it's no. You're trusting that this kid is going to retain everything you told him in this amount of hours or this many years, and they're going to take it out and use that against what they're seeing. And that's not how kids are. We're absorbing. We're learning. Yeah. We're taking in new things, and then we're adding them together. And then whatever happens, happens.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, so I think a big thing that maybe we didn't address mentally is that some of these norms and values just don't translate, and they have to change.
Yeah, of course. And if we're going to nitpick in terms of values and norms, yes, I do agree with you completely, but the principle is still there, you know? In my opinion, I think the principle of just respect as a whole is there. You know, maybe it doesn't have to be that particular example I gave about, you know, sitting at the dinner table and waiting for the elders. Because Lord gave an example. What if you guys don't sit at the dinner table and eat together? But I'm just saying that idea of just respecting your elders in general is fading.
No, because it's changed. Because it's not like you're disrespecting. In your brain, you think you're respecting.
No, you don't think that. But to them, we are. When you speak to them, we are a little more edgy. We're a little more
blunt.
We're a little more challenging. We're a little more disrespectful to them. And that's if you speak to them. You know, to us, it may seem like, no, I'm not disrespecting you. This is normal. Like, this is just how it is. I didn't say anything offensive, but I think from their perspective, and I'm speaking purely on their perspective, mm-hmm. I think they are taking it as they're seeing a trend that is happening and they're not liking it because they weren't raised like that. And they feel as though they're losing. We are losing some of those values, which is respect is just one of the values we're bringing up today. But that's just from my standpoint. Not to say that, you know, I disagree with you guys or I challenge you guys is what you guys are saying, but I'm just saying if you speak to somebody that is not from our generation, somebody older than us, a parent.
I agree. I've had conversations with my father even recently where it's like, where you can almost, and I don't, not that he'd mind or anything like that. He listens, hey dad. But yeah, you can also say what's up to my pops. But I think it's like, there is those points where you're like, yo, it's almost like, it's not even like I'm hearing what you're saying back to me. Like you're responding back at a time in which I just require you to do this.
Yeah, to just listen.
You know what I'm saying? So I agree, but I do think that, I think a lot of adults are also understanding that times are changing and these kids are smart. Like, they, you know what I'm saying? Like, and they know something I don't know.
That brings us to my question. Is it positive or negative? Because to us, it's like, nah, this is positive. These kids are smart. They know what they're doing. Just let them live.
But
to our parents, it's like, nah, this is negative. What's going on? We lost it. This is not how we were raised.
Lord, you can go first before I give my opinion. I have an answer to that for sure. So, Lord, you can go first before I say that.
I don't know. I think it's more multi-layered than that, though, because...
Come on, let's not make this that multi-layered. It's not.
It is.
It's not.
It is, because for me, more so in terms of what we're talking about right now, it's more so respect in terms of upbringing. But sometimes in certain cultural norms, in regards to respect, just because somebody has a specific title and they do things that are dishonorable, they could just use that as, I'm in this position, I'm in this title, so automatically you have to give me my respect.
We ain't coming at nobody, by the way, before you come at somebody.
I'm not coming at nobody.
But not only that, this is the diaspora
in you speaking. I've seen some situations that have transpired that like that. Because sometimes too, it's also, and I'm not even going to lie, and I see it in certain people, it's also like an ego thing too as well, though. Like, honestly, in my opinion, because sometimes too, when things that are happening are not done the right way, but just off the fact that you just hold a specific title, the respect comes with it. You always got to, I'm not saying don't disrespect people who have a specific title, but if things are not going efficiently, just off the fact that you just have to respect what they're doing just because of that title, and there's so many inefficiencies to it, then it's like, oh, this, and this usually transpired either within like family cultural values, where it's just more so of whatever this person said goes. But what if, let's say, the oldest daughter or the oldest son has some value or some input into what's going on in certain affairs? It's like, no.
I mean, one thing's first, tradition is tradition. Everything has a time and a place, mm-hmm. concerning what you're saying. Mm-hmm. Second thing is, when I was giving my example about diaspora thinking, this is exactly what I'm talking about. You may think this is not disrespectful, what you just said. Mm. I'm challenging you because you think my opinion should be valuable. Mm-hmm. I have this information and I need to give it to you. Mm-hmm. To your parents, it looks like, how dare you? Mm-hmm. You know, you have this information, but I've been doing this for 100 years. Mm-hmm. This is my tradition. I am not going to change it. Mm-hmm. So now you're going back and forth with this person or mm-hmm. your parents or whoever it might be, right? You're going back and forth with them because your ideas are just divergent. You just complete from two different generations, but he holds that title of being older than you, mm-hmm. right? More experience, mm-hmm. right? Maybe that might not be the case all the time, you know, but more experience and is the one that's been given the responsibility to keep his family or her family together. Mm-hmm. How does that sound to that person? If you come, you know what I mean? So that's my thing in terms of, that's why it becomes.
Here's the thing. You could still do everything that you do in life respectfully, because at the end of the day, even in my culture, you could say no to somebody by saying, please no, like Mipacho Dabi. That's the way of saying respect. So even though to some people, they'll say, oh, you're saying no to me as disrespect. You can say no respectfully. So in anything that you do,
that's learned, Lord, on your part.
Lord, it's not learned. It's part of my culture. Yeah, you have to say that now.
You can say that now. As a 15-year-old, you can never say that.
Yeah, so that's the next point I was going to make.
15-year-olds are saying that now.
that's the next point I'm going to make. It's all an age thing too, because right now I'm speaking from a young adult perspective.
Mm-hmm. You've learned these things.
So everything that I'm talking about, it's more so of, I have earned the trust and respect of my elders that I'm talking to, where it's more so now they can value or they can actually listen or actually decide to even hear me out. Okay. Because I'm not just saying it just out of nowhere. I've earned it. I've earned my stripes to be in that space to talk. So that's why when I made my previous
point. But you've earned it by giving respect.
It's under the guise of my age right now. Of course, if you're a 15-year-old or if you're younger than that and you're saying all these things, that's an absolute no-no. Because even me growing up, yeah, right, I'm going to challenge authority there have been some instances where I try to do that, but no, at the end of the day, it's whatever is governing this household.
Yeah, you were met with
goals 100%. So I've been in that situation, and I've grew from that, and I've learned so many positives from it. But there are also in certain cases where it's like there are some negatives of it, because it's like, you know, that's not part of our culture. You know what I'm saying? In terms of like going for certain things or going for certain roles, where it's like it challenges the status quo. By the end of the day, it's more so of the environment that you're in, that it's hard to implement that just because of the way life goes over here, because life over here and life back at home are two different things. The pace of life, the value of life, the value of work, the value of work-life relationship, it changes a whole lot of things. So although these cultures stems from tradition. a place where it was older than us, as Adama was saying, in some cases, it's very hard to translate in a new space where the pace of life or how life is not how life was or is back at home. You get me? So it's a delicate dance.
So naturally, it's going to get diluted. We can all agree to that. It's going to get diluted.
It doesn't necessarily have definition to get diluted. Changes, it's, not it's just more so. It's just more so apparent. No, because at the end of the day, for example, like. For example, in terms of language,
no,
right?
But before you start there, mm-hmm. right? Let me put it on a bigger scale for you. Mm-hmm. To you right now, right? Mm-hmm. From your life experience right mm-hmm. now, it's not diluted. Definition's different. Mm-hmm. What you're gonna teach your kids, right? Mm-hmm. Is a diluted version of what your parents taught you with added things from your own.
But that's natural. That naturally happens.
But think about
it's not
the
case for them though, bro.
But hold because on, guess hold what? I think also, and again, I don't have no concrete evidence from that, but I think even their parents were saying that, oh, the way we used to respect our elders back then has definitely
changed.
That's
my point. It's getting diluted.
I think that it's more so.
Because the next generation.
Can I say that though?
But diluted the next generation.
Diluted is not, more, if it's more subjective.
If you don't take the responsibility upon yourself to teach some of these traditional values that your parents, some things that you say no are not going to change. I'm going to keep this culturally, and I'm talking about respect here.
Because water that means it's being mixed with something that tastes like nothing. So that's why I don't like dilution.
No, but it's going to get worse and worse. No, this is just going to keep getting worse.
But that goes more. But that goes
and that's
more,
when it becomes negative in my
but
opinion.
But that goes more.
Okay,
that
I would love to answer your question as well because it's not negative. But sure,
it's more so a parenting. So for example, like in the context of language, right? It's literally up to the parents to really try to instill or keep that culture, that your native tongue alive, 100%. Now, French. In some spaces, is it harder to translate? Absolutely, because at the end of the day, wherever you are, you're mostly speaking the language of the country that you're in. So if you're in the United States, most of the time you speak in English. Of course, that does not give you the excuse, because I get that a lot, that you're going to, especially with my parents, losing your native tongue, because at the end of the day, if these group of people, for example, my mom would be like, the Spanish people are speaking Spanish, so why are you not speaking your own language? You get me?
That's a big part.
So that's all up to more so of, again, it's not diluted, it's more so of the next generation responsibility to take that and decide, okay, I'm going to keep this going. Or because even in certain households or in certain cultures, some of them, they don't even speak their own, the younger generation don't even speak their own native tongue, off the fact that their parents never really teach them and they're not interacting with,
that is true.
With people like that. You know what I'm saying? So again, it's that's why I say it's more multi-layered than that, because there's a whole bunch of moving parts that are happening, and there's a whole bunch of things that can definitely influence in terms of, again, if you're outside your homeland, certain things are easy to enforce. Certain things, it's more so of, it has to be intentional. Other things is you can do it, but not to the fullest extent or not to the same quality as it was back at home, because just, again, things are very different and things are moving differently in the space that you are. By the end of the day, you still keep it alive. For example, like in my culture, we still keep the traditional, like if somebody passes away, we do a traditional wedding. Like that stays alive. Certain traditions that happen in Ghana, we still do it here to this day. Now it might be a little bit variation from it, because just then again, you can't,
to be clear,
you can't bring certain,
not like, speaking about a majority of Ghanaian people.
I'm not speaking of a majority of Ghanaian people.
It's
no,
it's up to the individual.
Yeah, yeah.
Like it's always up to the individual. If you don't take it up on yourself, like you said, yeah, to teach those things, those are going to be lost values
for sure.
And there's many of those. So we're not going to be able to cover everything today, but yeah, we wanted to
swing.
So yeah, we can move on to the next one.
Just we can hop into that next. But I think just to hit my, I guess my little last point, but the goal is to raise kids better and better. Just to actually answer your question in its totality, because I feel like we heard one negative, but like just to tell you it's positive, in my opinion. The goal is to raise kids better and better. And I think that every generation or every parent after, you know, grandchild, whoever this is growing up to be the next parent in their long line, is taking everything that they've learned from their parents that's amazing, plus everything they've positively learned in their own life, and they're mixing it together to make greatness. They're not diluting anything. They're taking it to the next step plus everything that they've learned. Because you're not going to take the bad things from your parents. You're going to take all the good things you thought were qualified, and then you're going to take the good things that you've experienced, and then you're going to try to teach your kid these things and make them better than you were. You know, my parents' goal isn't to make a, it's not to raise, just raise a kid. It's to raise a kid that's better than them. And they're challenging themselves by working through this. But I think that all this coincides with a rough time period, like in life, in the world in general, where people are just redefining conversation, redefining some of these rules and these norms and these things. And the reason why I think I'm going to lean to positive as my answer is because I think what's really happening is just people are finding a way, because it isn't simple for people to sit down and be like, all right, this is how we're going to have, you know, a positive conversation, or this is how we're going to productively do this and do this. It's trial and error. You sometimes slip and you fall and something really bad happens before you learn how to do it really well. And I think that parents and children or whoever it is that's dealing with these, like we're talking about respect and all these things that they're learning, they're in this space now where they're just learning how to effectively do things better. Because even though I told that story about how my pops and all these different, like, he's like, no, yes, no. But like, even though he's learning as well. So a majority of the time he is trying to be like, yo, what is that? So his brain isn't, all right, even though I still have to watch out, you know, he can't say nothing too crazy. But it's like, no, now the dialogue is being open so both people can learn. Because what people are forgetting is that no matter how old you are, you're still learning.
Yeah, but
60, 70 years old, obviously it's tough to teach an older person new tricks like they say, but you're still learning. Both people are still learning life. You're still learning how to be a parent at 70 when you were learning how to be a parent at 60, 50, 40. It doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't stop. You know what I'm saying? So I think it's positive because we're sitting here and everybody's just trying to understand. And we're all going to get to the point where we're understanding that, yo, we're here to trade information. And we can agree to disagree, but we're here to trade. You know what I'm saying? Like, and then after that, we'll see what happens there. Right now, we're not at the place where I feel like people understand that we're trading. Right now, it feels like you're trying to lecture me back after I lectured you.
It's just
but challenge. Once we understand that, yo, we're trading info, I think this is going to be way more productive than it is, you know?
I just think it's just from a parent's perspective, you know, I do.
Oh, no, we about agree. To agree to disagree. It's positive.
No, I'm saying from a parent's perspective, I can agree with you. But I'm just talking about elders in general. If you can get
I think elders are learning that too.
No, but I'm saying if you can get a 22-year-old to run for a House of Representatives, right? Uh-huh. And they can challenge their elders and they can talk to them however way they want. Like,
I think people are learning that 22-year-old might be smarter than the 36-year-old or 80-year-old that's been on Congress or
but respect is respect. I think there's a way you can do things in class, and I don't think that's going to positively
because I mean it sounds like you've defined respect. Because that's what I'm saying.
No, but I mean respect is universal. It's just, so you know,
there isn't the same level of respect
as others would treat you. And when it comes to elders, there's just respect.
But to your point, you said the way that Lord spoke to, like, maybe the way he speaks to his parents, some people might say is disrespect. But you can find parents out there that think that's respectful.
I speak to my parents with respect.
So you don't?
In the African culture. I speak to them with respect.
No. I'm saying that some people, to his point, some people may find the fact that you're even able to sit down and be like, hey, I'm a working part of this dynamic and I'm going to have equal say as disrespect. But I'm saying there are parents out there who would find that conversation and dialogue positive and respectful. I think that's the point with the 22-year-old.
Not from my experience or just in my culture.
I think we're growing in that direction. Yeah. We're talking about the diaspora, though.
I mean,
yeah, but that's like, even in my code, like my experience living in the diaspora in my culture, I don't think.
I mean, here's the thing. So
it goes well, but we can go.
So I don't know. I'll end it off with this. In my culture, we still respect. Just the minimum form of respect is how you address somebody. So for example, I call anybody who's older than me auntie or uncle. That is the best way to show respect, is in terms of how you address them. So by default, addressing you that way, and you have to, because I cannot go and say, you know, in a formal way, oh, Mr. So-and-so. It's, even in my culture, that sounds off. Like, wait, what? No, but in culturally, anybody who's older than you, whether, and depending on how close of a relationship you have to that person, even though they're not like your biological father or mother, you can also address them as dad and mom, because at the end of the day, they're not only like old enough to definitely give birth to you, but also more so of, you respected them just as your elder in terms of the family aspect of it. And mm-hmm. usually the highest form, or not even the highest form, but the form of respect you show to an elder is literally how you address them. And you address them as auntie or uncle.
That's
its beginning. Yeah. So in that respect, I don't see it diminishing at all, because even some of my my relatives who recently just had kids, oh, say hi to uncle. Oh, say hi to auntie. I'm even called uncle. You know what I'm saying? From a 2-year-old. Because that's how they
get taught young,
they teach respect.
Heard. That all fair. I know all of us definitely felt passionate about that one. I think just to because we talked for a bit, so I think just getting into maybe one of the more specific value, I think would be cool, and just like kind of hot taking it because it may be a little bit of a hot taker. One thing we've all gotten into is marriage. I think we've discussed that a little bit. That marriage, the idea of it, the concept of it has changed through the diaspora, and like some of the values and norms and the importance of it has shifted.
Yeah.
And that may be a more specific value than the other ones. But I guess getting into that, how we felt that marriage has shifted.
By the way, I know this. We don't have too much time to get into this, so let's just. Whatever thoughts we have, speed it up. Like this, we could talk about marriage for hours. But
I would say, like, millennials go down. It's not really digging the marriage thing, because I would say with us, we are more focused on our career than to settle down with somebody at a very young age. Whereas our parents saw that marriage as something that should be first priority than career.
Yeah, early. They want to just get married.
Yeah. And I mean, it could have its positives and it could have its negatives, because it's like, I think in order for like a household and for a country to be economically successful.
Wow, country,
Yeah, a country, bro.
Okay.
People need, marriage is a good union in terms of keeping people together, in terms of building up economy within the household, and that could transfer within the whole country. However, it have its negatives due to, like, you know, income plays a factor, different personality types plays a factor, chemistry overall plays a factor, and a lot of
personally, would you say you're more inclined towards marriage or just,
I don't know, maybe in the future I might change my mind, but for right now I'm not really thinking about it.
Okay, so I would say that probably generally speaking, that's how most people in our generation would feel. Me personally, I don't feel like
I want
to get married. I think that's what I'm looking forward to. My parents are looking forward to that. It's just one day I know I'm going to be a married man. Okay. Just looking for that one. Haven't found them yet. But
Aphrodite might have to come from the heavens.
I'm out here looking. But just to get people, if you guys don't mind, just really quickly, how maybe the marriage culture differs in my culture and in West African culture. Like, they're similar, so I'll talk about that. But for the rest of Africa, it may be different. So I'm just gonna say how it is in my culture and how maybe it's different now that you live in the diaspora. Maybe you might not make some of these things happen if, you know, it's not, I guess, enforced up on you. Would you guys agree? So just really quickly, in marriage in Mali specifically and some parts of West Africa, I know Adama, we shared like similar cultures, so maybe you might see some of this. I don't know about you, Lord or Miri, but there are two sides, right? There's the husband side and there's the wife side. All right, mm-hmm. So let's think about them as two teams. This I help myself understand. So two teams. So at first, you know how here you know, you just pop the question to the what's it called? Your wife or your future fiance, she says yes. You know, you asked the parents before, hey mom, like, I want to marry this person. Hey dad, I want to marry this person. Is that okay with you? Boom, boom, boom. You make it happen. In my culture, you get to send something called asking cola. And cola is, I don't know how I would say it. Is it like a fruit or is it like a, like, it's a,
the cola nut?
Yeah, the cola nut, right? Mm. So that's cultural. That's a traditional piece that you send, to a family that you wanna, the men send to the woman's family asking for the parents first for the wife's hand. And usually that's like a delegation. It's like you send it and the delegation goes, and that's like before even everything. So it's called the asking cola. So you take that to the wife's family, the wife's parents and the wife, the rest of their delegation, discussing, they're like, oh, you know what? Yeah, I think they'll make a good couple. So yes, we give our blessing. So once that happens now, then you send the actual cola. And that's the formal asking the hand of the wife. And this is all from the men's side. So you send it, right? Now it comes with a bride price, you know. Mm-hmm. Back in the day, some people would say, Yeah, I need a sheep, I need 10 cows, I need 10,000 cows, whatever it is. Now it's more like monetary. It's like, this is the amount of money we go for it with asking for your daughter's hand. Now think about it. This is very sensitive because you're literally paying to take the daughter. So obviously the price is not going to be little, you know, depending on what the family is or what their means are. The family is going to request a certain amount of money. Mm-hmm. And usually from the two sides, I'm calling them delegations, but usually aunties and uncles on both sides going back and forth. There's usually one lead person the man's family chooses and sends. So this is between women, right? They're trying to figure this out. So once that's accepted, now like under the religious umbrella, your fiance is now. Once the family accept the bride price and all that stuff, they go through it. So now your fiance is. Now we're gonna get into the interesting stuff. So now the stuff
that wasn't interesting.
But now the stuff for the no, for the marriage starts. So from the men's side, you choose one woman. It could be your cousin or whatever. In my language, cousin. It could be a cousin. Like from the men's side, it could be a cousin that's gonna be the main contact person between the two families, right? So that person is gonna be. It could be a cousin. It could be an aunt. But it won't be your sister. Like it will be somebody who's close to you, but not that close, right? But somebody from your side of family who's going to be the main contact person between your family and the other family. Sometimes even it's in my culture, say griot, which is somebody who like sings, like an African artist who sings about the family, who does this messenger. So there were old messengers that sing the messages that's supposed to be sent. So that person is the bridge between the two families, and they are the person that are going to discuss the expenses. So for an example, it'd be like, my cousin gave me an example, for example, the nail salon where the wife is going to get her nails done. The wife is like, oh, I want this nail salon, right? So your contact person is going to be like, maybe that's not in our budget, but let me go back and consult my delegation to see if we can make this happen. So boom, they're like, yeah, we can make it happen. I agree with that. Where are you going to get your hair done? I want to get my hair done with this person here, here, and here. Okay, sounds good. Let me go back and ask my delegation. Can we afford this hairstylist to do the hair? Yes, we can. All right, boom, let's make it happen.
Long so details that's what I'm like saying. So they do little scared.
Exactly. Jeez. So they do little things like that until they come to an agreement and they can make everything happen. And then that's when we're like, all right, it's a go now. So that person's role is important, obviously, because they're the person going back and forth and communicating between the two families.
That sounds expensive.
I don't want to like.
That's what you got.
I don't know how to say like the wedding planner type thing.
They're not the wedding planner. There's probably a separate wedding planner, but they're the main. They're the bridge between the two families.
Planners, plural.
Yeah, planners. But they're the person doing it, right?
Okay.
So then, so she's in charge of organizing everything. I would say, the person you choose.
Okay.
And I think it's I don't know. I don't want to say the wrong thing right now, in my language, but I may be wrong, but I think it's Demba. I think that's what we call it, but I could be wrong.
Malian people out there.
You know what I'm saying? I'm just learning too. You know what I mean? So I was doing research about this and I asked people, obviously. So after that, right? So after all that's done, you did agree on all that. Now it's like, okay, we're going to go do the religious wedding. Mm-hmm. So after the religious wedding happens, the wife now becomes, gets formally introduced to the family she's about to go into, right? So So when she gets introduced, it's like a big ceremony that happens again.
Families don't even meet like that.
Yeah, they don't even meet like parents, that. But the two delegations finally meet after they had their diplomat.
Over here, you can bring your girlfriend to your house a couple right times away, before you get married.
Nah, you can't do that. So boom, that happens. So after that happens, there's this process where I don't know. This is for the wife. Now you have to get like a suit. It's a suitcase full of things, so like full of clothes, things that are just gonna make the woman happy in general, mm-hmm. right? And I hope I'm not messing this up.
Nice gifts,
that family send and stuff like that to be like, hey, this is all the gifts we brought for you to come to our home, not to become the wife. And my cousin told me like, due to tradition, most of the time they're like, this is not enough because like you're giving your daughter away, so like you need more. So they'll send like clothes, they might send gold, they might send perfumes, they might send bags. Hey, look at how we're going to spoil your daughter when she comes to our family. These mm-hmm. are all the things we have to offer for her, right? So they can be like, this is not enough, more. But most of the time, they're going to say, it's not enough anyways, but it's just like a traditional thing to show, oh, this is what she's coming into. She's coming into an abundance. And that depends on, obviously, families and social classes. It could be anything. So after that, now once that's accepted, right? From the woman's side now, your family also, which something's that similar to a wedding registry in America, where they just pick stuff on the register and people buy it for them, and then they start their new household with that. It could be like car seats, baby stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But on our side, it's just the woman side of the family does it.
It's like the baby shower, whatever.
Yeah, they buy all these gifts and they just put it together and they get the wife ready. So it could be like cooking utensils, anything, right? They might think the wife needs to put it together, and they're like, "All right, now you're ready to go to your wife's, to your husband's home with all this stuff that they give you, plus the stuff we give you." And that's, so that's just a religious wedding, you know. After sometimes there's a reception, there's a Western wedding, but I was just giving you know the religious wedding aspect of it, and yeah, I think that kind of sums it up. So, how do you guys feel about that in terms of marriage? It seems, you know, and from our perspective, living in the diaspora, you know, we don't think like this anymore. Yeah. This is that. When I was getting explained,
maybe that's
this,
why it's overwhelming, because I've been here for so long.
I'm like, you guys want to do all this? Nah, like, that's she likes me. I like her. We know that our parents are getting along. Let's get married.
Yeah, I just have a quick question. Like a lot of money.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds very expensive.
Yeah. I just have a quick question.
Like money. Yeah.
So everything that you're more describing is in terms of the male giving the female that he wants to marry something, right?
Yeah, because you are trying to convince their family members to let you take their daughter that they love so much.
So my thing in terms of like marriage around the world, but so my question to y'all is like, what are really the benefits of a male marrying a female?
I think that's like deviated the from the topic right now. I'm not even gonna hold you.
Like, I think this is I can kind of a little bit.
I don't understand the question, to be honest.
Like, what's the return in investment? What's the return of investment that he gets back from marriage?
Wait,
it depends on what do you mean?
That deviates from the topic we're talking about right now.
No, that's crazy.
I could try to hop into the question and maybe quickly.
That deviates
because you could have a family, you could have a communion with a female and not be married and still gain all the benefits of having a partnership.
This guy's bringing that
for out. Sure.
However,
okay.
Sure.
Marriage, I feel like.
Well, hey, lost values. Let's go. And Mary just.
Sure, I got you.
He just displayed it. Lost values. Why do I need to get married?
Like, I ain't saying that. I'm just saying, like, I feel like the business side about it is like, why go through all those extra steps if you really, if you feel like you love the person, then that all that shit matters, right?
I mean, from a religious standpoint, it's kind of different. But Adama, go ahead. You wanted to respond.
So to be clear, first of all, you're saying the process is unnecessary. You're saying just marriage.
Not the process.
You're asking why is marriage?
What's the benefit of a man marrying a woman?
Okay, I like that better than the process. Process is hard to think. But yeah, first to tell you, things are as fruitful as you make them, to be very clear. Like, no matter what you're doing in life, no matter what you experience, it's only as fruitful as you, as much as you take out of that experience and what you're doing. And I think maybe this ties into a little bit of the question, which is like marriage and how it's being looked at. And I think me living here, growing up in America, and like hearing my parents trying to tell me, no, this is how marriage works, and this is kind of what we want from you, and this is the type of girl you should be having your eye out, and all these different things. I think marriage has become something more so where people are looking at it and they're deciding how they want to live their life. And it's like, and it's more so like, okay, I want a partner who I can build with, who I can get to A, B, C, D, like X, Y location.
Mm-hmm.
How much can this person make me better? Qualities that I'm missing that I can find in this other human being. Like when I wake up feeling safe, there's so many different things that you're getting from a person, but that's why you go out and you find a partner. You know what I'm saying? Like it's, you're finding a partner that you're going to get all these things from. And even in situations where we're talking about back home where they're having to do things like this, that's the intention of parents. And like those people who are trying to put you together,
they don't think
you can do it by yourself. That's the point. You need someone next to you who's going to help you build to this. And I think that's just like, that's my answer to that. So how important is it? It's up to you. How much you get out of it is up to you is my opinion. Because even if the situation is negative, if you can look back and be like, I learned boom, 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 and boom, you've grown. And that was a positive experience, in my humble opinion. But at the same time, when it is positive and when you're actually like building from, how are you constantly making each other better? Like all those different things when you're they're investing in you. You know, both people are investing in each other.
True.
You know what I'm saying? Like it's a growth process and you're learning life with a partner that you can trust, you know what I'm saying, to like get to that step with. And I think that's That's what I get out of the importance of it, you know? Like, I think we were at a point where people weren't necessarily, it was like, okay, we're going to put, you know, a lot of putting people together and those type of things. But even when people were putting people together, the people who were putting them together had the intention that no one person can do it by themselves. We got to put people together so they can breed more humans or live a blissful life. Who knows? You know what I mean? Like,
well, Wait, just a sidebar.
I got the name for the person, the main messenger.
Yeah, clean yourself up.
It's Balma Muso Kuntigi. So that if it would be
we needed that one.
I got scared for a second.
Wait,
but yeah, Lord, go ahead.
Well, hold on. In terms of, because I feel like the question that you're asking is definitely important.
About your question.
However, it deviates from the question that Tamba asked in terms of just the cultural aspect of it. Because in terms of that process that you just explained, how much of it is upholding the United States?
I don't know. It depends on the family.
Yeah, how are you going to decide that?
Yeah.
Depends on the family.
Because
but that's what I'm saying. It's a lost value, in my opinion.
I don't know
whether in certain
It go back to my point in terms of... It goes back to my point in terms of where you're at. Because, for example, I know that in my culture, people who get married, they also do the traditional wedding. Now, in terms of to the extent in which they uphold all of the tradition in the traditional marriage, I don't know. I've never... I'm not married, or you know, I've never experienced that, so I can't talk to it. But as you're saying before, it all depends on the family and how far they want to go in terms of upkeeping the tradition and abroad, you know. So, but my thing to what you're saying, whether it's a good or bad thing in terms of upholding everything, I mean, in certain aspects, I know for example, it's cheaper. That's a good thing in the United States. Yeah,
money's not everything, my man.
It's not cheap to get married in the United States.
I know it's not cheap, but in terms of just the process and the headaches.
But I was saying more so towards in the diaspora. Like, let's say you marry somebody that's not from your culture. Now, is this process the same? I'm saying how it is directly from my culture, you know, and how people do it, what I've experienced. Right? But now I'm saying, let's say I marry, and take an example of me, I marry an Asian woman. Mm-hmm. How we do it now, you know what I'm saying?
That's up to you and the Asian woman to figure it out.
They definitely have a culture, right? And I have my culture. How are we going to put our cultures together to
make this thing?
And then not only that, living in a diaspora, does that count as diluting our culture? And I'm going to lose some of my values.
Ooh.
I'm going to pick up some of the Asian values to my kids.
Like, I don't think it's
you know what I'm saying? What religion is my kids going to be? Like, you know, things like that. I don't know. I'm just saying
it's a conversation.
That's what I'm saying. In terms of marriage is big, and I don't want to get too deep into it. But just to get people, I feel like it'd be interesting to, you know, some of our listeners who may not be from an African background, to kind of give them an insight of how it goes on our side.
And that goes back to my question. What's really the benefits of marriage?
Bro, we're not going to discuss this right now. We're not going to discuss
this. I don't
this.
Think your question is far. It's just going into that. It's just like, I don't think it's far from what he asked originally. Yeah, I just think it's just going into it just takes us like through so many different things.
But what I'm saying is we can have a different conversation with
we don't need
a different
to have
episode
one.
With the woman here so we can get their perspective. Because I feel I hate doing this, but I was mansplaining some of the stuff I was talking about.
Mansplaining.
Which is
for sure.
From a man perspective.
No, from a man's perspective.
It's mansplaining.
Yeah,
it's cool.
Mansplaining. It's fine. So having a woman here may be beneficial to us
course,
in a later
is.
Episode, but we just wanted to give like that's one of the lost values that we wanted to highlight as well is marriage. You know, some of these things don't happen in every single household. Obviously, we have a different perspective. As you can hear, Amiri, he doesn't even know what's the importance of marriage. So, you know,
I actually do.
You know, so some of us, you know, it's different everywhere. And the more and more we are generations, we're separating ourselves from our parents' generation, the more and more we don't think this idea of marriage is as important anymore, you know, than having a partner. You know, so it really depends. Like I said, we can get into it deeper in another episode, but just at a surface level right now, we can.
I guess, just to maybe give a little bit on the last question you posed, and then we can wrap our way out of this one.
Right.
I think, first to Amiri and Lord's point, or maybe, I don't know if Lord said it or not, but it's a conversation you had before. I'm still a firm believer that like nothing is being diluted, because diluted is like, you know, you're mixing with something that's making something less, you know, significant. And for me, it's like people are your goal is to be better than the last. So when you're taking and you're developing, because even within our own personal cultures, you can go from household to household and everybody's nitpicked the culture. Like, even though we share a lot of values, some people find different things to do. Like, even with the left hand concept, Some people may say, you know, you can hand it with money, but you can't eat with it. Some people say you can't do either or. It's not definitely not universal because that's not the case here. But I, obviously, you know, I mean, I felt the same. I grew up with, I've had my hand.
I'm saying the West African culture. Yeah, for sure. That's universal.
But to the T of it, there are still houses you can find where, like, you know, those little cadences, like even things people eat. You know what I'm saying? Some people interpret them like, oh, no, you're allowed to eat this. We can get away with this. Like, okay, picky. So when it comes to even like intercultural or interracial marriages or people like merging cultures and norms and values, I think the goal is to build. It's never to overwhelm, like, you know, the family you're trying to build or like the person you're with or whatever it is. It's looking at each other, respecting each other's spaces, not trying to kick anything out, and then figuring out how you can better shit. Obviously, it's not easy conversations. Let's be honest here. When you're talking, like, what religion we're gonna, not that's easy conversation
it's
at
kind
all.
Of like your compass. You kind of everything you learned your whole life. Now you have to. It's put to the test now. So yeah,
for sure. You just got to. You know. I definitely don't know the answer to it, but you sit down and you try your best to put everything that's positive and best forward. And I think at that point you don't lose anything. You keep the best qualities of everything, and you just get better.
Yeah, and we hope with this episode. Speaking about lost values, we sparked a conversation at your dinner table with your parents in your WhatsApp group chats.
Especially if you guys are eating separate
that,
right now.
Yeah, you know, that together. That are going to, you know, maybe have us living in a diaspora kind of attack this issue, you know, because people are kind of forgetting about it, putting it on the rug, but we wanted to highlight it and put it in the forefront. So maybe we can have conversations about these. Once this episode is posted, we want to see you guys engage with us about this, because we want to hear your opinions about this. You know, we have our own, we have our family's perspective, and we all come from different backgrounds, so we kind of exchange ideas. But we want to hear from you that's living maybe in Texas, that's not in New York, you that's living sure. in Japan, that's not in New York. So we really want to hear from you guys, and you can always find us on Instagram
at t.i.a_pod.
And you can listen to us on all podcast streaming platforms. Like we said, we're going to try to post every week, and we're going to stay true to that, right, guys?
Yes,
and also with you guys giving us feedback, it also helps us see what you guys want us to talk about, and yeah. we'll definitely talk about it. You know, we listen to you guys all the time, and even our personal friends and family members that do listen to our podcast and do send us things or ideas, we try to implement it during our podcast. So we do a lot of research both on the internet, but we also try to ask people as well to get their opinion. So
mm-hmm.
Yeah,
this is Africa means this is your space too.
Exactly. But once yeah. again, you can find us on t.i.a_pod on Instagram, this Africa podcast on Facebook, but we are more active on Instagram, but we're working on Facebook and mm-hmm. Twitter. We're on our way there.
Yeah,
so
yo.
Once again, thank you for listening, and
peace.
We'll see you on the next episode.
Pick them one by one. Make me bust my gun. Poison us like a long python. Gunfire in 911 dying. We never like the sound of them sirens. They only respond.